Anarchopreneur, episode number 35, a special interview with...
This is Ben Settle, and you're listening to The Nathan Fraser Show.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism. God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
What is up, free market squad, in the place to be? You're tuned in for another exciting episode of Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show. I am, of course, your host with a hero complex, Nathan Fraser. You, more importantly, you are the free market squad. Thank you. Before we start off, thank you for taking an hour out of your day to hang with me and my very special guest today, Ben Settle. Ben is just going to blow your mind with the knowledge bombs that he's going to be dropping on you left and right. Before we get into that, though, I do want to give a huge shout out and thank you to Truth Frequency Radio for picking up and airing this particular podcast. Also to UCY.TV. Jules, thank you for rebroadcasting the show over at simulbroadcasting the show over at your network. And of course, a huge thank you to everybody over at LRN.FM, the Liberty Radio Network, for picking up this show and rebroadcasting it throughout the week. I really appreciate everybody that helps get this message of free markets for free people out there. And that means the world to me. So without any further ado, I'm just going to jump into this week's interview. This interview is actually going to take up the entire hour-long show because, like I said, all of the knowledge that Ben drops could not be condensed into a single half-hour interview. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, free market squad, today I have the just incredible pleasure to have somebody who, I hate to admit this, but I'm a giant guru fanboy of Ben Settle, of BenSettle.com and the BenSettleShow.com. Ben, thank you for taking some time to hang with me and my listeners today. I appreciate it.
Hey, you know, Nathan, believe me, the pleasure's all mine. And I appreciate that you're a guru fanboy. That's fine. So I accept. It's all good.
Awesome. So I have an embarrassing admission to make. When I first started this new podcast that I'm doing, Anarchopreneur, I thought I had like the greatest name. One of my listeners came up with it. I thought it was like the greatest name ever. And then a mutual friend of ours, Tom Woods, had you on his podcast. And then I found out that you have a show or had a show at the time called Antipreneur. I listened to it and I felt like a cheap knockoff. So that's kind of why I wanted to have you on the show, but I was also incredibly embarrassed to ask you to come on the show for a long time.
Honestly, I don't even see the similarity. I mean, what you're doing is so much different than what I'm than what I was doing. So I think your name's fine. In fact, I ended that podcast because I got tired of talking about that stuff. I'm going to start a new one next year and it won't sound anything like either of them. So you'll be good.
Okay. Well, I was a bit hesitant to have you on, but I knew I was doing my listeners a disservice by not having you on. So I had to reach out to you. And I just to let people know who you are, in my opinion, you're a brilliant copywriter and a very contrarian copywriter. And it comes through in pretty much everything that you do. What is it? A lot of people in business, I hear this, you can't bring up politics, you can't bring up divisive issues, yet you kind of fly in the face of that and still maintain a pretty consistent level of success. What is it that gives you, first of all, the courage to do that? And why do you think that you're able to get away with it?
Well, you know, I've actually been thinking about this lately because this question has been posed a few times in different forms. And, you know, when I'm just doing my thing, I don't consciously think of any of this. It's just I don't have a filter. You know, like I just don't have – and I don't mean like I go out of my way to offend people or anything. I just – like if it's on my mind, it's on my mind. I'll give you an example. So just this last Saturday, one of my ex-girlfriends was texting me and everything, and you know, I said something kind of mean to her last month. It was like one of these personal things that she just kind of pissed me off. So I said something that was true and blunt, but I probably should have, you know, been nicer about it. But she goes, no, I'm not upset about that, Ben, because I know when I'm talking to you, I'm getting the truth. I'm getting what you really think. You're not trying to bull crap me. And I'll tell you what, this carries, and I do this in business too, when I'm writing my emails or doing podcasts like this. I'm just completely, I try to be at least as transparent as possible. I really believe that we're entering an era, and it's sad that it's taken this long to get to it. And I think this was the norm, you know, probably 100 years ago. But we're entering this era now where whoever is the most transparent is just going to stick out the most, because everybody else is playing it safe. Everyone else is playing to not lose instead of playing to win. And that's why you see people holding back and all that. So that would be my answer for that. I think it's just a transparency thing. I'm transparent in how I think. I'm transparent in what people can expect from me. Even when you go to like my Squeeze page, for example, on bensettle.com, if you go there, it flat out says below the opt-in box, where you, first of all, you have to click a box to acknowledge you've read this, that says, I agree to get daily promotional emails from Ben Settle every day. Like, I'm so transparent about this stuff because it just works. It brings in people in the right mindset. People are thinking the way I want them. They're not going in, you know, it's going to scare away the people I don't want. Let's just put it that way. And so that's just how I live life. You know what a governor is?
Like a NASCAR?
Or like on a Ryder truck or a U-Haul truck where it won't let you go over a certain mile per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so one of my friends, Doberman Dan Gallup, who said, Ben, you have absolutely no governor. And I think that this is something that, yeah, this is by no means unique to me. I mean, there's other people. I can tell you there's a lot of people who I associate with on purpose who are like that, like my friend Dan Meredith, for example. He's the same way. We're just not going to let people censor our thoughts and what we think. And it doesn't mean I don't modulate things to my market. I do. I mean, you know, you got to be wiser than the serpent, so to speak, sometimes. But, you know, when it comes to this stuff, marketing, selling, all that, I'm not afraid to call people out on their bullshit. And I'm not afraid for people to call me out on mine if they see it. And I would actually be grateful if I was doing something and they told me. So that's the way I work.
Now, when it comes to marketing, though, obviously that's a very against the grain attitude, but that's actually not even really the tip of the iceberg when it comes to you. There's a lot of things that I hear everybody in the marketing kind of community steadfast with one opinion, and very frequently I hear you come in and offer counterpoints that actually make a lot more sense than the pretty much mainstream narrative that's going on out there. How is it that you're able to break free of the conventional thought that seems to completely control most of the conversation in the marketing arena?
Yeah, no, that is an excellent question, and I'm really glad you asked it, because this has also been in my mind a lot lately, because it does seem to be coming up, these things. And I can tell you what my big influence is, okay? About 8 or 9 years ago, I was introduced to the teachings of the late Jim Camp. Now, he died last year, but he was the world's most feared negotiator. This guy was like the best of the best of all negotiators. The FBI brought this guy in to teach them that. You know, he was brokering these, you know, $500 million deals, negotiation deals, and all that. He's just a master at it. And his whole – and I'm really glad I found him as early as I did in my business career, because it really set me straight on a lot of this. He's a big fan of doing things based on principles and not tactics. So, for example, all the people you're talking about who are saying all this horse shit out there, and that's what a lot of it is. That's why I call it out, because it is. It's just based on tactics. But as Jim Camp would tell you, if he was still alive, now he was a pilot, a fighter pilot in Vietnam, and he was saying how he was taught. Now, this is what fighter pilots, I guess, are still taught, I would assume, to this day, that a principle overrides a tactic. Like, principles are just better to follow than tactics. So let me give you an example. There's a principle that I go by where I just, as a matter of principle, there are certain people I don't want on my mailing list. And I really mean this. It's not like some trick or something or to sound tough or to posture. There are, for example, people who I call opportunity-minded buyers. These are people who just buy everything. They don't implement anything. They refund things really quick because they're just buying on emotion. They're not thinking. They're not really business people. They don't have what I would call an investor's mindset. When they buy a product, to them, it's an expense, not an investment. Now, these are not bad people. I'm not saying, oh, these are terrible people, but they're not good customers for me. So in my emails, in my sales letters, in my marketing, I try very hard to repulse them away as a matter of principle. Just as a matter of how, just because that's how I do business. And I know who I want to do business with and who I don't. This is all very much a principle. But you'll have people who will go out there on purpose, like in their emails, as a tactic and say, well, this is what Ben does. And so they'll say, I want you off my, they'll write an email saying, I want you off my list if this, this, and this. I would never do that because to me, that's just dumb. But they look at what I do and they try to like make it a tactic. And it doesn't work. It blows up in their faces because people know it's not genuine and it's not true to them and they're not being honest. And so that would be an example of what I'm talking about with that principle versus tactic.
And being somebody that's on your email list and reads almost every single email that you send out, I would definitely second that you are very authentic in the way that you the way that you approach that and very much principle orientated. I'd like to just take a second to let you kind of give a little bit of an introduction, let my listeners know how it is that you got into marketing and then why it is that you decided to niche down on email.
Okay. So I'll try to make this as brief as possible. So in the late 90s, 1998, I graduated college and I didn't want to have to get a job forever because like you, maybe I'm not as politically oriented as you with this, but neither of us likes authority. I know that much. We both hate authority. So I didn't want a job and a boss and all that because I just can't stand authority. And believe me, I share a lot of your political views too. Don't get me wrong. But I knew I wanted to get into some kind of business, and I ended up getting into MLM. Because that's where a lot of people start in MLM. It's almost like a gateway drug into business. You know, it's like one of those things. But I got into it. I sucked out loud at it. I was just the worst internet or the worst network marketing distributor that's probably ever walked the face of the earth. I'm like every network marketing sponsor's nightmare because I just don't want to deal with a lot of people. I don't want to walk up to everybody within 3 feet and ask them if they keep their options open for making more money. I don't, which is what they wanted you to do. I just don't want to do that. I'm like the Grinch. I'd rather be up there on the hill with my dog bitching at the Who's and how loud they are than be amongst the Who's, you know? And so I was just terrible at it. I was just the worst. I learned a lot of interesting things and all that, but I wasn't good at it. So a couple of years in, What happened was I got in a lot of debt buying leads and products and, you know, just mismanaging my money and all this stuff, and ended up having to live in this like 2-room office for like a couple hundred bucks a month. I couldn't actually get a real home or, you know, rent a real apartment or anything. And I was sitting there after about 4 or 5 months of this, and every morning I had to get up early. Like I had to get up around 4 or 5, not because I had to get up, but because the landlord whose office was conjoined to my office, he didn't really want me living there, I don't think, but he had to come and use the bathroom every morning, and the bathroom was in my office. And the bathroom had no shower, it was just a sink basically in the toilet. And so I'd get up before he'd get in there, and I'd go down to the gym for an hour or two, play basketball and take a shower there, and then come back like I'm just starting the day, you know, all crisp and refreshed. And it's kind of a dorky thing, you know, looking back. But anyway, after it was pretty depressing, it was pretty embarrassing, like pretty humiliating actually. And one day I just was laying there at night, and I was just like, God, you obviously did not put me on this earth to be an MLM. This isn't for me, obviously. You know, I hope there's something better that I could be doing. I couldn't sleep. It was like 3 a.m. I had to get up in an hour or two anyway. So I went to the other side of the office where my bookshelf was, and there's this book that the MLM company had actually sent me as a book of the month like a year before. And it was a great book. I had read it once or twice before. It was real short. It's called The 7 Lost Secrets of Success by Joe Vitale. Now, Joe Vitale wrote this book, which is about this old school advertising guy named Bruce Barton. Now, very, very, very few people know who Bruce Barton is anymore. I guess 1 in 1,000 people, even in internet marketing, would even know who he is, unless they heard me tell this story already. And it was about him. Now, he, in the mid to early 1900s, he was a household name in America. the joke was you can't go anywhere without hearing this guy's name, Bruce Barton. He was a sworn enemy of FDR. He was running for Congress. He was kind of like he was advising presidents. I think he advised Coolidge. He just was around everywhere. In the business community, he was very well known. He's the second B in the big BBDO ad agency that's still around today. Well, anyway, in 1919, right after World War I and the economy was all blown to crap, this guy came to him. This out-of-work salesman came to him. This is in that book that I was reading. This is the page I just turned to. This out-of-work salesman came to Bruce and to his office and said, "Look, man, I'm down on my luck. I can't find a job. I need help." And apparently this guy had a knack for writing sales letters. And so Bruce Barton like takes him to the window and he says, "Look at all those buildings out there. You're supposed to be good at writing sales letters. Why don't you write a letter selling one of these businesses out here and hiring you?" And there's something about that story that just it kicked me in the nuts, dude. It was like, holy crap. My introverted Grinch likes, I could make a living writing letters. Like, this is new to me. I had no idea you could do this. And that night I got on Google and, you know, it was like a rabbit hole. I ran into the names that are pretty well known in my industry, like Dan Kennedy and Gary Halbert and, you know, all these big name guys, Jay Abraham. And it was like a rabbit hole. And so I did copywriting for the next several years. Right around 2008-ish, I started really studying this guy named Matt Fury, his email methodology, because he's like the email king, or at least he was at the time. He doesn't do much email anymore that I've seen. But at the time, he was living this lifestyle that I just loved. He'd get up, write an email, and he'd be done. And he would brag about it in his emails. Like, "I'm done. I didn't even check this email for spelling. I pushed send, and we're going to make this many sales today." And I thought, man, this guy's awesome. He goes, "Now I'm going to go off, and I'm going to go vacation in China and go ride elephants or get a massage, whatever they do." And for years, I've just been following. Like, I really wanted that. I didn't want to work even for clients. It's too much authority for me. I wanted to be my own client. So I started really studying his methods, and I started applying them to my own products and to client stuff I was working on. And we're making a lot of money doing that. And so I started like putting twists and tweaks on what I learned from him and studying it even deeper and systematizing it a lot more for my own personality, which, you know, I differ from him in a lot of ways, but the essence is still there. What he taught, the foundation, is still the stuff I follow today. And people on my list started saying, "Ben, when are you going to create when's the email product coming out?" And I wasn't even like planning to do an email product. You know, it's like, that's just like the market telling me that, you know, give us an email product. So I sat down for a few weeks and I systematized what I've been doing, the things that didn't work, the things that did work, whatever. And I created this like $800 email course, which sold great. But the problem is that I was constantly updating it because every day I write emails and every day I'm learning something new and I'm always coming up with some new insight and idea that's putting a lot more sales in my bank account. So I decided to do a newsletter based on email marketing, which I call Email Players. And when I launched it, I thought I'd maybe get, I don't know, 10, 20, 15, maybe 30 at the most subscribers. But I figured that'd be a good foundation because it's kind of pricey. It's $100 a month. And I ended up getting like 83 on the launch. And I said, shit, I'm done with client work now. And so I've been doing this and just focusing on that and also writing emails for other deals that I'm involved in, like in the golf market and things like that. But that's how I kind of got from MLM living in an office to, you know, now.
Nice. And that opens up a bunch of different ways we could go with the conversation. One thing that I took out of that and also translates into a lot of your emails is you're like a master storyteller, and you incorporate story into your emails. You incorporate stories into your podcast. And one thing that I notice about your emails is you're great at what I like to call creating open loops. When I see your headline, there's an open loop and I can't close it mentally without clicking on your headline. And then with the stories in your emails, you do the same thing. You drive them to a point where they're just dying to see what's on the other end of the click on the bottom of your email. Can you tell us a little bit about your tactics or your strategy behind doing, because you do that better than anybody I know. And I'm on a lot of people's email lists and you're one of the only ones that I consistently open and read.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up because like, I don't even use the term open loop. In fact, I didn't even know what it meant until a few years ago. Cause I have a good friend in the email space named Andre Chaperone. He's really good at that sort of thing. And I think he actually names it in his products and stuff. But to me, that I don't approach it tactically. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm doing that, it's not because I ever was taught open loops. I'm simply taught I'm a very simple meat and potatoes copywriter. I just know that curiosity is the most important, or I should say the strongest appeal you can make in advertising is curiosity. That's a principle by which I write ads and emails, and that it's not a tactic. I mean, there are tactical ways that I apply it, but it's a principle I go by. I like driving curiosity and tension. That's just storytelling. That's drama. And so when I'm doing that kind of thing, it's not even conscious anymore. It's just something I do. And it does work. And let me tell you a story about this, just for anyone listening to this, if they want to challenge me on the power of curiosity. So there is this the late Gary Halbert, who's like one of the greatest marketing and copywriting minds who ever lived. He had a protege named Scott Haines, and he didn't take very many protégés, Gary Halbert. And Scott Haines and I had become friends over the last few years, and I got to meet him and hang out with him and talk with him. Well, anyway, he told me this story about when he was learning from Gary Halbert. Gary Halbert liked to go on a boat like a day or two before a deadline was due. He wouldn't do any work for like 6 months, right? He didn't actually write the ad until the afternoon it was due. But he'd spend like 6 months just thinking about it, right? And so he took – one of the things he would do is go on a boat and just drive around. I guess they called it – that's how he'd get his ideas. Well, anyway, I guess one day they were out on the boat and Gary asked Scott like a trivia question. Scott, what's the most important appeal you can make in advertising? And Scott's like, well, that's easy. It's self-interest. And Gary's like, no, you're wrong. It's curiosity. People will buy, you know, very, very expensive products that they didn't even know existed 3 minutes ago, that they don't even necessarily want, because a bullet point or something in that ad just created an itch they had to scratch. And here's an example of that. Gary Halbert talked about how Entrepreneur Magazine hired him back in like the 70s, I think, for like a BizOp product or something that wasn't selling very well, and they're getting overrun with refunds and all this other stuff. So they brought him in to help with that, and he rewrote the ad and he put a bullet point in there that was, and I can't remember the exact bullet point, but it was fake cocaine, you know, the perfect substitute for the real thing. Now this, they said that fake cocaine. Like, they said that Gary said, according to him, that calls came in for that ad a year after the ad was stopped running. Because people just had to know what that was, which tells you something about the 70s, I guess. But so anyway, when you talk about open loops and all this, I'm just trying to create curiosity. I'm trying to tell stories and create tension. I'm talking about – I work on people's insecurities. I try to create a vision, because this goes back to the Jim Campism, vision drives decision. You know, here's an interesting thought, Nathan, just for people who are listening to this. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I think separates my stuff from everyone else's out there, if it indeed is separated. And that is, vision drives decision, meaning nobody makes a decision unless you give them a vision of some reason why they should. So apparently, people who have lost the ability for emotion, whether through accident or, you know, the birth defect or disease, apparently they can't really make decisions. They like just the decision to tie their shoes is like a big deal. It's all about decision. Unless you can create a vision, they won't make a decision. And so in my emails, what I like to do is create a vision. And that's what telling stories and all that does. It lets you start with the market, the people you're writing to. You create a vision for something, and then I can build a bridge to what I'm trying to sell. But you notice in my emails, I don't just come out swinging about a product. I rarely ever do that. I mean, it's very rare. I'm always talking about something that has nothing to do with the product. Just this weekend, in fact, this is a timely thing. Just this weekend, I was creating some videos for this product I'm doing with a company called AWAI. It's called the 10-minute workday, and I'm basically showing how you can get your workday down to 10 minutes writing an email a day. And one of the bonus videos, I analyzed this email I wrote for the MLM niche last year. It was selling a product that shows you how to become an expert in just 3 minutes per day, because in MLM, that's everything. They want to position themselves as experts, and it helps them get listened to and taken seriously, and it's good. So when I was writing on these emails as an affiliate, me and these other guys kind of teamed up. We called ourselves the Legends Table, and we teamed up, and we went after it to try to win the affiliate contest and all that. And one of the emails I wrote, the one that got the most clicks, and got the most sales, which is even more important, of all of, like 14 or 15 emails I sent the whole weekend, this one got the most sales. The subject line was, you know, an open letter to husbands who make less money to their wives than their wives, and it bothers them. Now, this has nothing, there's nothing, and the first, it's like a 800-word email. The first 600 words have no mention of a product anywhere. I'm simply telling the story about this guy who was a stay-at-home dad, and his wife was working in the corporate world, And he was a good guy. He's a good husband, good father. But his wife was spending more time with her boss, who was like a multimillionaire and this like super successful guy. While, you know, her husband's like the stay-at-home dad who doesn't make any money. And, you know, I'm not saying this is politically correct or not, but it's just, it happens. You know, there's a reason there's like this high divorce rate, and this happens an awful lot. And I knew this going in. That's why I was able to write this email, which nobody else I don't think could ever have written. And I told this story that made a lot of people very uncomfortable, and how ended up, and this is based on a true story. I told the story about how this, you know, she's going on more girls' nights out with her friends. She's always talking about her boss to her husband, completely disrespecting him, you know, but she's not doing it maliciously. She's just more attracted to her boss than she is her husband. And she ended up divorcing him out of the blue like 6 months later and marrying her boss. And then the email segues into, you know, that was the vision I was giving them as in the email. So I segue into, how could this have been prevented? Well, maybe he should have started his own business, this guy at home, and been more successful than her boss. It probably would have been prevented. I'm not saying that buying this 3-minute expert product is going to save your marriage, but if you're in a position where you want to make money from home, this is going to help you do it. And, you know, that was the gist of the email. But I started, there was no mention of a product at all for like the first 700 words. And then I pitched it only after I created a vision. So that's something I think I do very consciously that a lot of people don't.
And you do it very well. You mentioned sending out 13 or 14 emails over one weekend. And this is something that a lot of people might say would be overwhelming to get that in their inbox. And I've heard, I've researched other people that say email once a week or just do a newsletter on Friday. But you're a big proponent of emailing every single day. That's kind of like one of your staple positions is email every day, and you're actually consistent. You are somebody who practices what you preach with that. Why are you such a huge advocate of what other people would say would be kind of like overwhelming for your readers? And actually, it looks like we're coming up on a break, so I will give you the chance to answer that on the other side. Don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. The one, the only Ben Settle on the Nathan Frazier Show. We'll be right back.
Free minds. Free markets. Free people.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. You like listening to podcasts, don't you? Have you ever thought about starting a podcast of your own? If you're a hardcore podcast fan, you probably have, and you've probably got something great to share with the world. I'm Nathan Frazier, and I've created a free online podcasting course for people just like you. Pre-Launch Secrets gives you the top 5 secrets you need to know in order to launch a successful podcast. You'll learn how to create the core concept of your podcast, how to build a solid audience, and how to consistently generate great content for that audience. These are the secrets the pros use when coming up with ideas for their podcasts. And after this course, you'll have them all at your disposal. The course is free. It's taught by me. Enroll today. Go to podcastblastoff.com/course. That's podcastblastoff.com/course. Podcast Blastoff, the future of podcasting.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handy Car's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
And we're back. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Frazier Show. We're joined today by Ben Settle of BenSettle.com. Ben, you are, in my opinion, an email marketer extraordinaire. And one of the things that you do and that you advise is email every single day. This goes completely against what almost every other email marketing guru out there advises. And I wanted to know why. Why are you so adamant about emailing every single day?
That's a great question. I love this question. So there's a lot of things at play here. First of all these people who say they're simply projecting their biases onto their market, which is a terrible, terrible mistake. I don't know how else to, like, if somebody has a problem that they need solved, right, and you have the solution to it, They want to hear from you. They just want to hear from you in a way that's pleasing to them. They don't want to hear like, hey, look what I have. This is all I is what to offer. Buy this right now. Blatant pitch. They don't want to hear that. But if you approach them the way I'm talking about, where you create a vision for them and you show that you really understand them and their problem, and you're talking to them about it, and you're talking about it to them every day, which is key, who are they going to trust? The guy who's emailing them once a month with just a sales pitch, you know, or you who are showing up every day? Put it this way. This is something I heard from who I mentioned earlier, Matt Fury. I just love this. This also created one of the principles by which I do business. He was, and I don't remember exactly how he worded this, but he said, if you don't have something to say every day, it doesn't have to be a lot, but just something to say every day, maybe you're not this expert you pretend to be. Because if you really know your stuff, the question should be, what don't I say today? You know, like I could talk about this stuff forever, right? You know, then I could talk to you about this for the next 5 hours because I know I have a deep knowledge of this stuff. The people mail once a week and once a month, they're either A, projecting their own biases onto their market, which is like anti-marketing to its core. So I would question that they even understand marketing 101. And or two, they just don't know their subject. They don't know their market well enough to have a conversation with them. Either way, anybody who says that, and I know people who do this, so it's not like I'm not trying to tear anyone down. I'm just trying to help them. They need to learn their market better, and they need to stop projecting their biases onto their list because it's a terrible thing to do. I mean, you're not – put it this way. You're actually hurting your customers. I mean, if you have a product that people need, that could really benefit their lives, and you don't let them know it exists every day, and I'm not saying in a blatant throw it down their throat every day, but at least there's a link there that they could look at if they could. I think that's like – I think you have a moral and ethical duty to do that because that's the whole point. I mean that – imagine this. Imagine you had a painful urinary tract infection where it feels like you're pissing razor blades every time you go, like in that movie, The Green Mile, you know, if you ever saw it. But, okay, you have this problem. You go to the pharmacy and they say, well, we're only open one day a month. So sorry, you can't. We're not gonna, you know, that's the equivalent of what these guys are doing. They're only opening their store one day a week, one day a month. And, you know, I think a lot of it is people just don't know how to communicate with their list. So they come off as, you know, they're afraid they'll get unsubscribes and they're afraid they'll get bad feedback. Hell, if anything, I want negative feedback. I know I'm doing a good job if I get people mad at me. You know, the worst thing you can do is have people indifferent towards you. You want them to love you or hate you. You want hot or cold. You don't want this lukewarm nonsense. And that's what these people are all fostering on their list is lukewarm. And then when they do pitch something, they probably do get like yelled at and stuff. But I'm there every day. They have to check a box saying, I agree to get daily promotional emails. I rarely get anybody mad at me anymore. Maybe I should take that off because I used to get some good hate mail back in the day. But anyway.
So my next question would be, a lot of people, and I made this mistake when we first launched our product. I didn't even have an email list for it yet. We waited until we had a product before I started trying to build an email list. And now it seems like it's a pretty good idea, like you mentioned, with how you came up with email players, is building an audience and letting the audience dictate to you what the market wants. For people that are building an audience, but they don't have a product yet, is it a good idea to start an email list? And what's your advice on that?
Yes, start an email list right away and start mailing it daily. And let's say you don't have something to sell. Then send them to an article or something you've written. You know what I mean? Just something that's on your site that's you, so they can bond with you more. Because every day that you don't mail a list, it loses a little bit of its love for you. One of the guys I've learned from, his name is Ken McCarthy. He's like the founding father of internet marketing as we know it. This guy is the reason all of us are even selling online in some cases. He basically trained all the gurus are all out there pounding their chests nowadays. They all learn from him. And you know, he was the first guy to put on a conference about internet marketing to say, hey, can we even sell with this? That's how far back we're going. But he likes to say that lists are like vegetables. They rot over time if you don't, you know, unless you're mailing it every day and nurturing it. So I would say that. But I also say this, you know, you don't have to necessarily wait for the market to tell you what they want. Sometimes you just tell them, you know what's good for them because you've studied your market. You kind of know what they want because you should know what they're already buying anyway. and you just sell them something that's better than what everybody else is doing. And when the second you find out, the second you know what you want to sell, create another list, another like squeeze page, opt-in page, and say discount notification list or some, or pre-notification list for XYZ product, whatever you're going to call it. And this could be months out. It doesn't really matter. Just as soon as you know you're going to have a product. And then every day mail your main list and just as if you were selling a product, but you're not pitching a product. You're pitching them to join that other list to be notified when your product's ready. Then you will have a nice – you'll have two lists you can mail when you launch. And the other one you can mail a lot more aggressively because they've raised their hand saying, I'm interested in this. That's one of my little launch things that I do, and it works like crazy.
That's awesome. And I noticed that you did that when you launched this email players or the El Bimbo's Apprentice. We'll talk about that in a second because I did want to ask you a couple questions. But you mentioned segmenting, and I wasn't going to go there, but you mentioned it, so I have to go there. I noticed that you email every single day to get – to get at people who have opted in for your email players initial PDF, and you email them and you get them excited about signing up for the actual program. If you've only got one product, or somebody who's listening to this only has one product, and that your tactics work to get them off of just the regular email list and turn them into a buyer, what's your advice then? Should we start emailing two emails every single day, one for people that have bought and one for people who haven't? And what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, ideally in direct marketing, and the internet lets us not have to do this anymore, but the ideal in just direct marketing in general, especially offline, is you spend money to get your customer, and then you make your real profit on the back end. In fact, you shouldn't even make a profit on the front end. According to like the direct mail guys, you'd want to take any extra profit and put that money into mailing more pieces out, you know. Now on the internet, we don't, you know, it's much cheaper. You don't have to use postage and all that. So it kind of depends on your numbers. But now I'll be honest with you, I'm very lazy on the back end. I should be emailing offers to my buyers, but I rarely ever do because I sell a physical product, and so I send them offers via direct mail. But let's say somebody, just like you said, they have one product. One way you could go about it is sell your product. When they buy it, segment them off onto a buyer's list, and then that buyer's list starts sending those people affiliate offers, you know, for related products. That's a very viable way to make a pretty good living, actually. Yes, it'd be two emails a day. But if it's a similar enough, if the product is similar enough on the back end, you can actually take the front end email you wrote and just tweak it a little bit with a different call to action. So I'll give you an example. One of the things I've sold in is the prostate niche, people with prostate problems. And for a while, I used to sell supplements on the back end. I don't anymore. In fact, the guy that I'm working with in that market, him and I get all these front end sales, but we're too lazy to create a back end thing, and it's kind of holding us back. But that's a different story for another time. So on the front end, I did this for a while. I send them an email selling the ebook. And then on the back end, for the back end list, I would take that same email and just change the call to action to my supplement instead of my ebook. And so it worked out. It's not always that easy to do, but that is one option if you sell a similar enough product on the back end.
Okay. And let's jump into your recent experience with El Bimbo's apprenticeship program. I was one of the people that jumped on the opportunity. I was one of those guys that raised my hand very early and got onto that segmented list. And I mentioned this in the Facebook group. One of the sign-on bonuses was that you put all of your previously available podcasts behind a paywall and said, if you sign up for El Bimbo's Apprentice, you're going to get access to these. I had already downloaded all of your episodes. I've probably listened to every episode you've done at least two or three times.
Oh, wow.
I love your work. Like I said, I started out by saying I'm a huge guru fanboy. I wasn't exaggerating. But I still signed up because for a couple reasons. Number one, I'm not able to get onto the email players at this time, but I did want to. I feel like I've gotten so much value out of what you put in. Just for the opportunity to give you some money back, even if it was only $7 a month, was something that I immediately jumped on. Plus, I liked some of the sign-on bonuses. Plus, your bullet points in your sales letter for it were very convincing, but it didn't come to fruition the way that I think a lot of us were expecting. And I'd like to get your thoughts because I hear a lot of people talking about building a online paid community and getting you know, build a forum and get people to pay every single month and all of these ideas is kind of like the one of the newest kind of trends or fads in the entrepreneurial space. And I don't know, obviously you always have a different point of view, and I'd like to know what your experience in that forte, what you came away with from all of that.
Well, okay, so first of all, I got to say that it was one of the most successful launches I've ever done, if not the most successful. It was and I actually started holding back toward the end. I wanted to send more emails, and we didn't even have PayPal set up, or it would have been even crazier. But it was a complete nightmare from day one. Like during the launch weekend, I knew I was going to end that thing because it was such a pain, and it's not anybody's fault but my own. It's all my fault because that business, the podcast business, was not really my business. It was under Jonathan's umbrella. That was my producer, Jonathan. Like it was all under his merchant account. He owned the websites and all that. My job was just to come up, show up, and like talk. But since I have email players, people were getting it confused with that. And, you know, it was just like they were sending me personally support tickets, which we had a support set up for that. And they were confused. Like I managed to confuse my entire audience because, you know, it's just is what it is. So it just wasn't worth it to me. The technology was not working the way I wanted it to. It's just not. I'd be sitting there fielding these emails constantly all day, and I can't do it. it's not my thing. But it was successful too. It was like, wow, man, this was like super successful. But Jonathan was as happy. We were so happy when I said we're ending this. I thought he was going to be like mad. But he was like, God, man, I can't take this any longer. And even Misty, the announcer chick, I mean, people were hunting her down, ask her support questions when, you know, it wasn't her job to do that. And like, but there's no way that would have sustained itself without somebody grabbing a shotgun and killing themselves probably. but that said, if that was my only thing, and I hadn't confused anyone, it would have been fine. It would have been absolutely fine. I don't know. Like, it's weird. This. I don't know if this is a trend that I started with the paywall, or if this was already going on. I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. But I know Jonathan wanted me to do that like a year earlier. That he wanted to start charging for the podcast. I thought it was a good idea. Looking back, I prefer, and it's funny because I talked to Tom Woods about this a little bit too, about his podcast, because I don't think it would work for him behind a paid wall. I think they're like in your market too. I don't know if it would work. I think you have to almost be a specialist in something for it to work is behind a paid wall. And sometimes, you know, political type stuff is probably better just to model the talk radio model, you know, take paid ads, because that's how a lot of money is made that way. But, you know, it's not really for me to say what people should do, but it was an adventure. And, you know, we're still dealing with a little bit of the aftermath of it, but come September 1st, all that crap is officially done and over. And, you know, I don't have to think about it anymore. So, you know, it is what it is. Well, you know, people said that about direct mail too, and it's doing just fine. So unless email is absolutely outlawed, okay, or something, which I don't think is going to happen, I don't see it going anywhere. But it's something I do think about. What's the next step? Well, the next step is to not be reliant on email. I'm way too reliant on email. I'm the first to admit it, because that's what I use for all my front-end sales. But I use direct mail on the back end. So I would probably just find whatever new media makes sense and apply the same skills. You know, the mastering email, I can tell you right now, it basically means you've mastered all the other communication skills, whether it be video or podcasting, direct mail. Whatever it is, whatever comes out in the future, communication is communication. It's not necessarily writing or talking. It's just communicating. And, you know, emailing, especially the way I do it, it just makes people better communicators overall. Believe me, I just started doing public speaking a couple of years ago, and I took to it very naturally. Like the first time I talked, and I'm not saying this to brag or anything because I don't really judge this stuff. I just go out there and talk. But people were like, man, that was like, it's like you've been doing this for years. It's like that was the first time I ever did it. And it's not because, oh, I'm some great speaker. I'm not. There's so many mistakes. I mean, I watch my old talks. I'm telling you, I see the mistakes I make. But it doesn't matter because it's the communication. It's the storytelling. And I was just at this mastermind a few weeks ago, just a small mastermind, probably like, I don't know, 20 people in the room. And, you know, we all had to give our little spiel and give a tip and all that. And then we were all having beers that night. And one of the guys goes, Ben, you had the whole room mesmerized. And I didn't even realize it. I was just telling them a story about my villains and heroes. I have a theory about villains and heroes as far as marketing and, you know, using how villains – I could go into a whole thing with this. But basically that every problem that your market has is a different villain. And if you treat it like Disney treat or comic books treat their villains, you just bring a different villain every day. You know, in your emails. And the guy's like, you know, you had like the whole, it's like when you were talking, everybody was shutting up. And it's not, again, it's not because believe me, I'm not the best speaker. You just listen to me now. I bumble, I stumble, you know, I ramble, I go off on these tangents, but it's just communication. It's no different than, for example, Ronald Reagan. He was called the great communicator, but how much did he screw up when he was talking? Like all the time, because it didn't matter about the actual form. It was about the storytelling and the passion and the emotion. And so I think this can be applied, whatever comes in the future, whatever media comes out, I'll just apply it to that. I'm not really all that concerned about it.
What are your thoughts on SMS and text marketing? It seems to be kind of like rising in popularity. The send text episode 1 to 55444. Have you looked very much into that? And what are your thoughts on the potential of that?
I think there's a lot of potential for it. But as a consumer, and I'm just looking at, and I'm projecting here, I'm the first to admit, I'm terrified that I'm going to start getting spammed by text. Yeah. So I don't know if people are going to be giving it up that same easily or not. But I do know that it can be very effective, especially for like local businesses and that sort of thing. And it can be extremely effective. I mean, my gosh. In fact, I think remember that a few Super Bowls ago, there was this ad called "And So God Made a Farmer." It was like for Chrysler. And you know, it was Paul Harvey giving this talk, and you know, it was all about farmers. But then at the end, there was like a shot of, you know, Chrysler or Dodge. I don't even know who the hell was, what car company it was. That's how bad the ad was. Like, it was a good story. It was a good commercial in the sense that it was interesting and fascinating. But like, you know, it wasn't selling anything. And I remember writing a blog post the next day saying, what a waste of potential. They just spent $30 million on this commercial and nobody even remembers what the fucking car was they're selling. What if they'd said, you know, for more information about how to get deals on this or something, text this number. They would have made their $30 million back, like in a week, probably, I would guess, because I think that would be a very effective use of marketing with text. So yeah, it just depends on the business and what you're doing. I could see it being really good with launches. Like during a launch, you just send a couple reminder texts out. I don't think you can be as aggressive with it as email, but you know, it has its place for sure.
So one last question for you, and then I promise we'll wrap it up after
that. That's all right, man.
I really do appreciate you taking so much time with me today, though. Kind of like a consistent theme through today's talk has been storytelling and using it in your emails and using it in your podcasts. And your podcast, Antipreneur, has come to an end or come to a close, and I know that you're going forward. What lessons from podcasting have you learned that have translated into email, and what lessons from email have you been able to translate into your podcasting?
You know, I always looked at podcasts as just an email, but I'm talking. And one of the reasons I put it behind a paid wall is because I tend to give more information away that people should be paying for during a podcast than I would in an email. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to put it behind a paywall, because once I get going, I just don't shut up about it, you know, which is fine, I guess, for some people, but people should be paying for it. They'll apply it more and that sort of thing, and it's more valuable. So to me, it was always a matter of how can I always be entertaining first? Because, you know, they can turn any podcast on and get how-to information at any time. But unless I'm entertaining people, I'm not going to be keeping people around for very long. And I think any popularity my podcast had, and it was getting up there in popularity, not as big as like someone with huge lists. I mean, my list is only like 14,000 people, you know, so it's not like, but if I had a bigger audience, I think it would have probably made its rounds a little bit better. But if there's anything I did more, is I always tried to go in with the goal to entertain them before teaching them anything. And even though people think that's not what they want, like there are people who say, no, I want to be taught more. It's bullshit. No, nobody – people value entertainment far more than they do education, far more. That's why entertainers make so much more money than teachers. Teachers don't make anything. Entertainers make a lot of money because they make people feel good, and people like that. It's almost like an addiction to entertainment people have. So I'm not saying that's a good or bad thing. I'm not going to fight it. So to me, entertainment, or what I would – referred to as infotainment, where you mix information and entertainment, is key in both mediums.
And what's next for Ben Suttle in the podcasting avenue? Because I'm going to just be completely honest with you. I'm having huge withdrawals every single Monday. I update my podcast and you're not there. And I'm not happy with that.
Well, so you know what, since you've listened to my podcast more than I have, you'd be familiar with the Email Players Rules episodes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be more like that. It's not. It probably won't be called that, but those are always the most popular episodes, and they were more philosophical and success mindset type stuff, more than just tacticals like do this, this, and this. And I think people need that. I think people are craving. It's a weird thing. There's so much information out there, how to, that it's easy to get, but there's very few people who can give real live, like, you know, real life experience mindset stuff. The things that really get people, because a lot of people could do anything if they want. It's not hard to put a website up and start making sales. People just don't believe they can do it. They don't believe in themselves. Even though they can, there's nothing stopping them. But I think it's the motivational mindset. Do you remember when you joined El Bembo's Apprentice? There was a PDF in there about the secrets of the history's most persuasive and influential villains. Do you remember?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so it's going to be like that kind of information. It's stuff you can use in marketing and business and sales, but it's also stuff you can use in your personal relationships, dealing with the girlfriend or whatever, you know, wife, dealing with friends, negotiating better. It's that kind of stuff. It's going to be more like that villain stuff. In fact, I'm having that villains book turned into a physical book pretty soon. I'm going to launch it because I think there's a lot of value in that for people. And so it's going to be more along like that, more like Email Players Rules than all the other episodes.
Nice. I cannot wait for that. Now, this is something that I don't usually do for people, but I do this for you all the time. I respect people's inboxes, and I know so many people abuse inboxes, but I have recommended so many people to sign up for and get the first issue of Email Players for free and just learn from your emails, if nothing else. Where can people go to do that, and what do they get when they sign up for your email list?
Okay, well, go to bensettle.com, and bensettle.com. I have to spell it because my Midwest accent sometimes doesn't sound very clear. The E sometimes sounds like a U, I've been told. So bensettle.com. You don't have to opt in. You can opt in if you want. If you don't opt in, you can just go to the blog. There's like 1,000 pages of articles and over a dozen hours of audio and video, and just all free. But if you do give me your precious email address, I will send you the first issue of my Email Players newsletter, the PDF. It's a print newsletter, but I send you the PDF for the first issue. There's 24 ways in there to start making more sales with your emails, like starting today. There's none of this is hard to do. People have told me they've made thousands, and in at least a couple cases, tens of thousands of dollars just applying that information and that issue. So that's free. And then, of course, you'll get my daily emails every day. And, you know, you can come, stay, lay, or pray. I mean, you can do whatever you want. You can leave anytime you want. It's no big deal. But if you stick around, you'll be hearing from me every day. And, you know, if you just want to observe how I'm doing it, just stay on the list. You don't even have to buy anything.
And guilty admission, that's kind of what I do. I'm honest. I learn every single day from – I examine your emails. I critique them. I pick out things. And I'm not somebody who just – plain out swipes your stuff, but I'm always learning stuff from yours and then implementing it into mine. So a giant thank you for all of that. Again, listeners, I don't ever send you guys to anything. I never ask you to go sign up for anything. I 100% endorse signing up for Ben's emails. And Also, check out his site. So much great, valuable information there. I can't wait for your new podcast to come out. I'm going to definitely be subscribing. Is that going to be on Jonathan's platform as well?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to help me with it still. He says he wants to. So, you know, it's not, we're not even going to monetize it at first. I just want simplicity. You know, I'm going to have like a commercial to join email, to actually probably just join my main list. That'll be it. Because it was putting all these products in a store and all that is really what kind of started complicating everything. So, right. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Ben. I appreciate your time today. And go check out bensettle.com, ladies and gentlemen. And that is the end of the show. Wow, time flies. All right, until next time, Free Market Squad, faith in each other, not in authority. Be your own boss. Hashtag BYO boss. We're out of here. Deuces.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Are you a liberty-minded entrepreneur, small business owner, agorist, or freelancer? Do you ever struggle in your business and feel like you're all alone in the world? Can you imagine how great it would be if there were a community of freedom-loving business people just waiting to connect with you? Can you keep a secret? There is such a community. Free Market Squad is the online mastermind group for people who are passionate about freedom and success in life. Access to a mastermind group is probably one of the most valuable things you could have in your life, and membership in the Free Market Squad is absolutely free. If you have a Facebook account and you want more information on how to join the Free Market Squad, head on over to www.freemarketsquad.com. That's freemarketsquad.com.